hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? A trans female is kicking the competition's butt in skateboarding, and one of her biological female competitors is fed up with it. At Flex 30, with high school athletes now profiting off of NIL in California, how long before Texas follows suit? And in mere minutes, it is our weekly chat with the great Paul Wadlington of IT On 3 and EGAT. I'm Trey Elling. Isaiah Collier is behind the glass. Sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two, we will start by reminding you that it's Rory on top of the board. He's not done with his round yet, but it's minus five so far. That is the lead. Got a golfer at minus four. Got a couple named Kuchar and Zalatoris at minus three. And Tiger and Spieth did not have quite that good a day. They're obviously playing with Rory, in case you know your golf, but they're both at plus two. We'll get you an update once they finish off that round. And coming up in the next hour, actually it's this hour, coming up maybe in 20 minutes or so, that group of Scheffler, Rahm, and Morikawa is going to get out there, and we'll let you know how they are doing. Right now, though, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline. I'm always looking forward to talking to this guy, but there's some special ingredient about today. I'm not exactly sure what it is. He's Paul Wadlington, Scipio Tex from Inside Texas, on3.com, and yes, the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. Trey, he is even sponsored for the people.
That's right. Sponsored by the Wadlington and Winslow Mortgage Team, which we will tell you more about after our conversation with Paul. What's up, Paul? How you doing today?
I'm doing great. I am looking forward to hearing the segment about the skateboarder. That's why is it all the best women are men?
Sounds like something W.C. Fields would have said back in the day.
Chad and I were thinking about this in pre-show, Paul. Like, I couldn't name one female skateboarder in the history of that activity.
Yeah, I my skateboard knowledge tops out pretty quickly after Tony Hawk. But, yeah, Tony Hawk, I imagine, would be pretty dominant as a female skateboarder as well.
Yes, he would.
Yeah, we'll get into that conversation.
Guys, I heard some wisdom today, and I want to bounce it off you. You mentioned W.C. Fields. He was a really quotable guy.
Yeah.
And really clever quips and very dark humor. And I heard some other wisdom, and I think it was Marcus Aurelius, or maybe it was the Buddha, or maybe it was Jimbo Fisher, who said, "Don't throw darts when you have no glass in your house."
Wow. Did that come out of his mouth? Because we were getting ready for the show and didn't get to hear all the Q&A. Did that happen?
Oh, it was a 9-minute press conference, and it was the most entertaining thing I've seen in a very long time. It's the most defensive display I've ever seen, and he went hard in the paint on Nick Saban.
Yes, he did. Paul, obviously we started the show talking about the weird back and forth. Obviously, I could get why Jimbo might decide he needed to defend himself. How much he defended himself is another issue. But take me back to last night. What would you have said if you're the voice of Nick? You're the Jiminy Cricket for Nick Saban. You're the voice of reason on his shoulder. What would you have said to him as he started to fire that one off?
God is omniscient, Chad, so I can't provide him with advice.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I think that was actually kind of disrespectful and sacrilegious on your part.
I apologize. Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry. My apologies to the Lord.
But were I to counsel the Lord, Saban, I would probably recommend he not bring that up publicly. But you know what? Old Nick was not happy with what the Aggies did, both in the season, upsetting them in Aggieland, and also after the season, beating them on the recruiting trail. And, you know, Saban's insinuation, if you listen to what he actually said, he said that the Aggies used NIL, prolifically to purchase their class.
Wow, all right.
But suggested, if you listen to the intonation, that it wasn't actually NIL, that they don't have their receipts in order.
Right.
And I think that caused Jimbo Fisher to have his response. Now, I got to say, from the Aggie standpoint, I've heard better defenses on that show, The First 48. You know, where the guy comes in and they say, "So what happened?" And they're like, "I wasn't there. If I was there, she deserved it. And if it did happen, she stabbed herself three times, officer." Jimbo rolled in there like he came in off a bender. His lip he had enough upper lip sweat to fill the Brazos River. And he's constantly interrupting. He says Nick Saban is a narcissist sociopath with a God complex and says he deserves a slap upside the head. That was the quote.
Wow.
It is awesome. I am here for this. I am just pleased. This is what the offseason needs. This is what radio needs. I'm amazed you guys have put in the work to do segments today. I would just be playing that on a loop every 9 minutes and doing commentary on it like Mystery Science 3000 with the hockey stick and the lacrosse stick.
Oh, my God.
Well, Paul, Jimbo set all of this up with that eight-minute tirade he went on after signing day. It's like he was so adamant that they didn't do anything wrong. It was very clear in that moment, on top of the fact that an 8-4 football team just got the number one class in the country, there was something fishy going on. And yeah, you can pin it on NIL and just the lack of guardrails, as Bob Bowlesby would put it, but Jimbo incriminated himself by ranting like he did a few months ago. It's funny, here, I just don't understand why Nick Saban is getting so petty with things. Like, is Nick Saban really that butthurt that he had the top class in the country stolen away from him by Jimbo?
Yeah, he is. Have you ever met Nick Saban?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? And then with regards to Jimbo and his response, when your wife or girlfriend walks in the door and says, "Hey, honey, what have you been doing today?" Don't say, "I'm not having an affair. You're having an affair." That's what Jimbo did. That was the most incriminating rebuke I've ever heard in my life. Do you guys remember the old tobacco attorney on Saturday Night Live, Nathan Thurm?
Yeah.
Used to be played by Martin Short.
Absolutely.
And he'd say, "I know that. Why would I not know that? I'm not being defensive. You're being defensive." That was Jimbo Fisher's press conference in a 9-minute loop. It's amazing. It is remarkable. He's interrupting reporters' questions, making little comments. He's slamming down water every 14 seconds. Oh my gosh. It's one of the best things I've seen. This, if y'all have the 9 minutes, I heartily recommend you spend the time watching it. This is going to be better time spent than anything you could do in your career or with your family.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to checking the rest of it out later today. We had time to grab that opening statement. We got that to the people. We got into the discussion, but sounds like there's even more out there. So, Paul, I'll ask you the question nobody asked Nick and nobody asked Jimbo. Nobody's followed up for the definition of buying a player. When Nick says it last night and Jimbo defends it today, what do you think each of them would say if I said, "Can you guys define what you mean by that? What do you mean by buying a player?"
That's such a great point. It's all rhetorical insinuation. If I say, "She's a hardworking girl," that's different than me saying, "She's a hardworking girl."
Right.
And I think when Nick is saying they bought their players, I think he's implying that they didn't get Wings and More endorsements or an endorsement from the Wadlington and Winslow mortgage team. So I think he's suggesting there's a little more going on there. And I think Jimbo is a little indignant knowing that St. Nick is not exactly he doesn't exactly have the cleanest hands in college football.
Right. Yeah. Because he's one of the guys that has worked with him, Trey. He knows when Jimbo says, "Go call the guys he's worked with," someone could say, "Well, Jimbo, you worked with him. Tell us. What is it?"
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while, obviously, but it's clear to anybody who follows college football that it's not like Nick Saban has been abiding by all the rules throughout his dominance in Tuscaloosa.
How dare you, Trey?
That's the other funny part of all of this.
I'd say Bama has a level of sophistication in their cheating.
They do.
That everyone else has been chasing,
yep.
And they have some deniability. They create some compartmentalization, and it's a smart the way they do it. I think, there's the Tennessee approach where you hand people cash in McDonald's bags, and there's the Oregon version where you pay people in Bitcoin, only to have Bitcoin crash immediately thereafter.
That hurts.
That's rough.
So, I think you need to go the Texas route, which is you just shake down your alums and say, "Hey, you're sponsoring the following," and the alums pony up the money. It's all done above the board. Are you buying a player? I guess, but it's kind of like the rhetorical insinuation between working girl and a working girl.
What's the Miami way, Paul?
The Miami way typically involves chains, cocaine, and a powerboat. But
yeah.
Well, a lot of Colombian models. I frankly am a fan of the Miami way. If I had my choice, I'd go the Miami way.
And Paul, since we brought up Miami, we're talking with Paul Wadlington, Inside Texas on 3.com. Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, as we do every Thursday here on the Horn. I thought it was interesting that Nick not only went after Jimbo, he mentioned Deion Sanders and Jackson State. He mentioned Miami and all the bragging on social media. But, Paul, wasn't it Nick Saban who started all of the bragging by saying, hey, my quarterback's almost a millionaire, and he hadn't taken a snap?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. Look, Nick is comfortable in hypocrisy, right? You know, he has the greatest resume in college football history. And if you don't think there's a little sense of entitlement and arrogance and sort of a sense that he can pronounce on all things, I'd say you'd not been following Nick Saban. This was the guy who, when his early defenses were getting exposed by the spread and the hurry-up offense, he said that needed to be stopped because it's a college player safety issue. And then 2 years later, Nick's running the spread, hurry up, no huddle, right? Because he needed time to change out his personnel. So it's not above Nick Saban to posture in a selfish way. That all said, Chad, let's not change the spotlight from Jimbo Fisher's disastrous and weird press conference, because Aggies are going to love it because it feeds Aggie indignation and a sense of oppression, which all Aggies love, right? Just as Longhorns love to have a sense of we're above it all and too good and arrogant, that's our wheelhouse. Aggies love feeling scorned and put down upon. We'll show them, right?
Right.
And I think they're going to rally behind him. But you got to realize, outside of Aggie land, Jimbo looked crazy. He really looked He really looked nuts and unhinged. And it's like the Bard used to say, right? She doth protest too much. That's what it felt like. I think the best thing he could have done is released a statement, not had a press conference.
Yeah, me too.
And you just say, hey, Texas A&M and our university, we have a burning desire to compete and be the best on and off the field of play. On the field of play, we outfought and outworked Nick Saban in Alabama in front of 100,000 Aggies. And then immediately after, we outfought and outworked everyone to get the number one recruiting class in the country. We're proud of those young men. We're proud of their families. We're proud that they chose to be Aggies. We're going to take care of Texas A&M. We recommend Nick Saban take care of Alabama. Yeah.
He's right. That was the best way to handle it, because Jimbo Fisher is incapable of measuring what it is he wants to say on anything, much less something like this.
Yeah, of all the people that was about to go back at Nick Saban, the fact that it was Jimbo Fisher made it the wilder story, Paul, because he is that guy that can put 9,000 words into 30 seconds. And me, earlier today, as an Aggie, my biggest concern was, uh-oh, coach, what are you about to say? How fast are you about to say it? And how little thought are you about to put into it? That was my concern.
Are we just going to gloss over the brilliance of that off-the-cuff press conference statement?
No, we were not. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. I was thinking of the exact same thing earlier today, Paul. I didn't craft it near that good. Mine was a more first draft in like a seedy bar. Yours was like a 10th draft at a Starbucks, and it was brilliant. And I wish that's what my coach had done. I absolutely wish that's what he had done.
Post haste.
Yeah, I really wish that's what he had done. But now, you know, he did what he did.
Hey, Nick Saban is getting interviewed on Rick Neuheisel's SiriusXM show later this afternoon.
Wow.
I got to think there's going to be a retort. And this thing could fuel for a while. You guys got some content for the next couple of weeks. Be excited.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And the other thing we wanted to get your thought on, Paul, real quick, these two rule changes college football has made official now, that conferences can determine their championship games however they want, divisions or not, and then this unlimited recruiting, unlimited scholarship deal for the next 2 years if you need to get your scholarships back up. What do you make of those?
The scholarships back up is a great coinciding with A&M's probation in 2024. I think that's going to be great. And then in terms of the desire to set their own conference games, actually the Pac-12 did something correct, which was they allowed the highest winning percentage to be in the conference championships, the two teams with the highest, rather than using the divisions. And that's the best decision the Pac-12 has made in regards to football in about a decade. Now, they're going to cancel this upcoming season due to seasonal allergies. But nonetheless, I think it's a step in the right direction.
Oh, man. What do you think the SEC should do with regards to the conference championship game thing being scrapped with if you have so many teams, you have to do it in divisions and take division winners? Obviously, it was a big deal for the Pac-12, ACC, and I'm assuming the Big Ten, with how quickly two of those three announced that they were planning on changing things. How should the SEC handle that once Texas and Oklahoma are a part of the conference?
They're going to go winning percentage with tiebreakers. And I think the structure we're going to see is pods, rival pods that you're stuck with, you know, three other teams you always play. And then you're going to have a switch out of, six other teams alternating each season. And then I think they'll take the best winning percentage. They'll have tiebreakers. Usually those tiebreakers are score deficits. So you're going to have some incentive to run up the score on people, which would make the SEC extra butthurt. And yeah, I think that's how they'll do it. What do you guys think?
I think that that makes a lot of sense. I guess the bigger question for me is what they choose to do with pods. Like if they go with a 3-6-6 where you have those three teams that you play every year and then you you rotate the other six or the other 12, I should say, every 2 years. And which of those teams should be in Texas pod? Like the easy answer, I think, is Oklahoma 1. A&M 2, so that they can play that game every year, and then it's a question of what that third should be, probably in Arkansas.
But no, I would think it would be our rival Vanderbilt.
get as easy as possible.
That's
with
what
that.
I'm
A&M
pushing for that one.
Their traditional, the A&M should have their traditional rivals, Texas, LSU, and Alabama.
I've heard similar thoughts turned the other way, Paul. I've heard similar ideas.
Don't know what you're talking about, Chad.
I've been pushing for Kentucky and Vanderbilt to be in the A&M pod since day one. Those are some serious rivals. I don't know why y'all are laughing.
Horses don't get along with Shelties.
Well, and Paul, it's exactly a question that's kind of come up. There's been a little reporting out there that maybe there's some power at A&M that isn't thrilled about being in a pod with Texas. If you were one of those Aggies, would you actually ask the SEC to leave you out of that pod? And if you're the SEC, would you even care and would you listen?
You want me to be an Aggie?
I want you to put yourself in the role. You've already mentioned the Bard in this discussion. You came up with an extemporaneous, incredible idea for Jimbo. I think you can play the role.
All right. Let me clear my mind.
Oh, God.
Let me feel a sense of being beaten down and indignant. Okay. You know what? I could understand why A&M wouldn't want to share a pod with Texas. The whole thing was about separating and creating a separate identity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know. It's a great question. I wish I had a glib answer. I don't know, guys. I mean, what do you think? What's your sense as an actual Aggie, Chad?
Well, I mean, as you well know, Paul, I'm a very different kind of Aggie, so I've always wanted the game. I want the game no matter what. I want it every year, and I do not want it to seem like A&M is somehow trying to avoid Texas. But a lot of Aggies feel differently. It's the other side that really fascinates me because I've watched the SEC do some things in regard to A&M over the last 8 or 9 years that doesn't make me think they truly respect A&M in a major way. So I think they're going to just ignore it.
A&M was the means of unlocking the state of Texas.
Right.
And that's not just recruits, it's television sets. Hmm. And you look at the demography of the United States, you look at its trends. Boy, if owning Texas, Texas is the land you want to stake out for many reasons. And A&M was a tool to do that. Of course the SEC wants Texas, and of course they don't care if A&M doesn't want that. And of course the SEC would put A&M in a pod with Texas, even if A&M doesn't want that, because that's great TV ratings and it's awesome for the SEC. I think the question is which side wants to appear to want to be avoiding the other, right? Because Aggies can't have egg on their face saying we don't want any part of Texas. So I think ultimately you might get bluffed into it. And look, I mean, there's a reason the schools are mentioned in each other's school fight songs, right? There's a reason there's a lot of A&M traditions built around TU and all that. And there's certainly, although Texas tries to be above it all, and I can tell you in all honesty, I hate OU. I find A&M amusing and irritating, right?
Right.
And there's a difference. And so I feel like A&M's family. I feel like OU is a home invader. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes.
It does.
Yes, it does. That is the best. I mean, the best way I've ever heard that explained by a Longhorn. That's well done.
You can't kill your family. I can kill a home invader in Texas, right. Not in California, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, unless you're living in a tent off of Embarcadero, then you might be able to get away with it.
You could do anything you want.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that about A&M ultimately having to call the bluff and ending up in that same pod, because let's remember when the news started to slip out about Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, they were initially livid, and I think they put out an official statement with regards to this is something that we're completely against right now, and then they had to walk that back and say, oh yeah, we welcome them into the conference now, we can't wait to resume that rivalry once it gets going.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough spot for A&M because I do think the move for A&M was a great one because it created a separate identity. And I think it obviously was a great financial and sort of political decision as well. But ultimately, the A&M needs to understand that they were the first step in acquiring the state of Texas for the SEC. And you don't acquire the state of Texas as a whole by adding SMU, Baylor, U of H, or Texas Tech. You do it by getting Texas in Texas A&M, and then you own the state of Texas. And there is no more valuable college football property, full stop.
Yep. And then you put that game on television every single year. That's probably
and
what they're
people
going
to watch it, and you sell advertising.
That's right.
And if you've been following this whole technological revolution of DVRs, live sports advertising is the only thing worth a dang anymore, other than advertising on your radio show or my podcast.
There you go.
Would you guys want that game back on Thanksgiving?
No.
Of course.
Don't care.
You want to play it in the opener, Chad?
No, not an opener, but play it. I think it should be played on a Saturday. You can go Friday after Thanksgiving, Saturday after Thanksgiving. I don't need it on Thanksgiving. No.
Yeah, I'm a little bit tired of the Friday after Thanksgiving. I say either Thanksgiving night or just move it to the Saturday.
I think Thanksgiving night's amazing. I love it. I have great memories of that.
Me too.
That said, you do lose a little bit of the student participation. So maybe the Saturday after. I love all the feel of that game. I love that the weather gets a little cool. Feels like hitting weather. And yep. There's just a rhythm to that and the finality of it. And, look, the fact is it's not quite Service Academy level. But if A&M's having an off year and they beat Texas, that was a pretty good year. And I think Texas maybe to an extent feels similarly, maybe not quite as much, but I think as A&M has developed sort of his own identity, I think some of that Texas, maybe obsession, I think that's diminished. And I think it's a more balanced approach that this is an opponent, but I think reestablishing the rivalry will bring back some of that hate. And I think it's fun. I really do. And, the Aggies that I have that are friends, it's a great way to talk trash to each other, every year throughout the year. And some of that's diminished, although it really just spiked up with that Jimbo press conference.
Yeah.
So I want to thank Jimbo for that.
Absolutely. All right. That is Paul Wadlington. Check out Inside Texas on 3.com and the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. Paul, have a great weekend. We'll have Trey tell him about Wadlington and Winslow. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, thanks, fellas. Really appreciate it. Y'all take care.
Thanks, Paul.
Great conversation as always. Tell them about it, Trey.
Yes, that's right. Our weekly chat with Paul is brought to you by his company, the Wadlington & Winslow Mortgage Team. Austin's housing market is still sizzling and home values continue to rise, but interest rates have also gone up. Did you know the average mortgage interest rate is at a 12-year high right now? Notice I said average, though, which is why there's never been a more crucial time to contact Wadlington & Winslow. I spoke with Gabe and Paul a little while back and was blown away by the deals they're still landing for their clients, both for new home purchases and cash-out refis. If you are a well-qualified buyer who's looking to secure a safe loan to buy a house or for some cash in pocket now based on your home's skyrocketing value, it's high time you call Wadlington & Winslow at 832-557-1095. Trust me, you'll be glad you did. 832-557-1095 or reach out at mortgagesbygabe.com. That's mortgagesbygabe.com for the Wadlington & Winslow Mortgage Team.
Gabe Winslow Mortgage Broker, NMLS number 1613381, C2 Financial, NMLS number 135622.
Coming up next in our Flex 30 segment, where you can catch that great interview from last night if you missed it. The 7-on-7 tournament's coming up, and what NCAA rule is going to affect high school kids all over the state of Texas and around the country? We'll tell you on the horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Sometimes you forget how songs start. You know, you're so used to just hearing the little hook part of a song, and then you realize it's a big lead-in to this thing. I don't remember there being this big a lead-in on MTV. We hadn't even really started the keyboards yet. Now we're getting in. My God, I wish I could explain to the young people how much this video got played.
Who is this?
You don't know?
No.
Wow.
I thought it was Beat It at first.
All right, let me tell you the name of the song, and then maybe you can tell me the band. Ready? The song is called Iran. No?
Uh-uh.
God, you're young. Zay, does this song mean anything to you?
Yeah, it's a classic.
Okay. A classic. Did you hear him say that? He said that to make me feel old. Yeah, old
it
man.
Is,
yeah, Gramps, it does. It's a classic. This would be A Flock of Seagulls. With Iran.
Those guys had some of the goofiest hair in the history of pop culture.
They got after the hair, no doubt about it. Flock of Seagulls. A little Christine McVie earlier as a solo artist, and the New Radicals have been a part of the show today. Thanks to Zay for his great work. He's hanging out today. We're talking hoops. We're talking football. And yes, of course, Saban and Jimbo, which is kind of football, but it really is the soap opera of college football. We've definitely gotten into that. We'll continue that discussion, but we also wanted to get you a little taste of the high school sports scene because it's going to connect to some of this recruiting stuff. So let's get you a little Flex Talk, shall we?
Flex ATX for the best high school sports coverage. Listen to the horn and go to FLXATX.com.
And if you do that, you'll see the full schedule for the 7-on-7 event for Lake Travis on Saturday morning. They're going to try to beat the heat getting out there and get started at 8:30. So if you want to get out there early, lots of schools represented. And last night, we told you about it yesterday, Keaton Kubeka, the wide receiver from Westlake, was on with the guys on the Wednesday night Flex show. And the interview that you can go check out at FlexATX.com starts with him talking about trying to get, I think it's Kendrick Lamar tickets that he wants to get to go see Kendrick at the Moody Center. So okay. There you go. Or Kanye. It's one of those two. He wants to go see at the Moody Center. So that he and Zach talk about that and then get into football stuff.
Did he get the tickets?
Well, no, he's saying once they're available. I don't know that they're even available yet.
Okay.
I think at some point they're about to be on sale, it sounded like. Sounds like he's got a on sale date coming. We've all been there, right? We're not to the on sale time yet.
Wouldn't be the first time somebody has groveled on these airwaves to get tickets for a show.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm shameless about it.
And nowadays, it's a whole nother world. Not to be an old man, but the way you and I used to buy tickets is so different now. There is a crazy system in place. It's tougher to get. There's more fees. There's more money you got to spend. And those big companies and the bots and stuff are in charge. It is tough to get around. So you can check that interview out there. And also... again, you could go check out the 7-on-7 Saturday morning if you like. But Trey, I thought we should get into a little bit of the high school angle of these stories. People hear, you know, Jimbo and Saban are going after each other, but we've also talked about a couple of these new rules. Let's make sure we're clear on one of these new rules because I think there's a sinister side to this thing. The good side is for a school like Kansas. The rule is for the next 2 years, they put up something in place last October that said you normally can have 25, but we'll let you have up to 32. That's if 7 of your guys go transfer portal or whatever. We'll give you those extra. But now they're saying for the next 2 years, 2 full cycles, you can have as many as you need. Now, you can only have 85 scholarships, but you can recruit, you can sign as many letters of intent as you want, theoretically, to get you back up to the 85 scholarships. So for a Kansas that really lost stuff after, what's his name left, Les Miles, and even before that, Charlie Weiss left, they can build it back up. But Trey, I worry about what the big dogs are going to do with this rule.
Right. It's all about thinking about the pitfalls of a rule change. And the pitfalls with this one, Chad, are the blue blood programs, like the Alabamas, theoretically, the Georgias of the world, they can just run guys off because they have that next batch coming in, and maybe there's a couple more than 25 guys that they want to sign, And so they've had a kid in the program for a couple of years. They tell him, hey, it's time for you to enter the transfer portal and find someplace else.
Yeah. So what would stop a big dog? Let's go to Georgia. Let's go to the national champs. And Smart has been griping about depth, right? You send guys go to the pros, guys head to the draft, and he's got guys in the portal. Well, okay, but now I've got unlimited guys for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
What would stop me from bringing in as many as I want, 10, 15, 20 extra? But wait, Chad, they can only have 85. Well, sure, but they could come up with, call it whatever you want. There's gray shirt now, but it's something different. Call it the new gray shirt. The new gray shirt could be go to the collective, talk to the collective, and say, hey, could you get our guys a little scratch to hang out and be my buffer guys? Mm. Be the buffer guys for if I have a big injury. I have a guy transfers. My backup quarterback gets pouty and he wants to transfer. No big deal. I got two others in that last class. Did y'all not notice that? So the reason I tie it back to high school, Trey, if I'm a badass high school prospect in the next two full cycles, I'd make sure to ask extra questions if a team that's having trouble comes after me. And by trouble, I just mean they've been losing. Or if a big dog comes after me, just double check on things. If the Georgias, Ohio States, Bamas, USC, Texas A&M, all the list of those come after you, start asking about how many guys you're recruiting. Because the next 2 years, the answer could literally be like 55 if they wanted. If they really wanted to do it.
Yeah, but 55 would be, that's probably far-fetched too, though.
That's where the alarm bells would go off.
Hopefully. Well, I'm just saying, like, if you are really trying to sign 55 guys, that means that you only have how many guys on scholarship for the next year? 28? So that is a far-fetched hypothetical right now. Now,
everybody else is a walk-on, and you talk to the collective about a walk-on program. We got a new walk-on program. It's called Walk-On Bulldogs.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like, what's wrong with that? So for a year, the walk-on Bulldogs hang out in Athens. They might get an NIL deal, but the collective will help them out. And they get, and then they get in school. And either they enroll them in school in a different way, or they just literally don't go to school for a year and just have a hold year.
Yeah, I think that coaches in that situation are also going to want to be careful about bringing too many new kids in.
I hope so.
Like, you know, if you're talking about 40 to 45 high school seniors who are about to be freshmen on campus, that's a lot of newbies,
right,
that you're having to manage.
It won't be that many, but in our lifetimes, the numbers that usually blink to people are, I remember some classes getting up into the 30s for certain schools. I don't know why, but it did end up being SEC schools back in the past. I don't know why, Trey. I have no clue.
You want to ask Jimbo and Saban about that one?
No, they've been saying enough. I don't want to ask them right now. So it's just a rule to keep in mind. The other one we've talked about is that championship game rule for all the FBS conferences. They can set up their championship games however they want. Man, I am hoping. Every time I hear you say 366 in regard to the SEC, I get a little bit excited. I don't trust them to put a system that fair in place, but boy, do I get excited about it. I love the idea of that. For you to be able to say to a kid that if you come to our school and you stay 3 years, you're going to play every SEC team once. And if you stay 4 years, you're going to play them all home and home. Like, that's incredible if they could just have enough guts to do it. In fact, I'd stop making fun of the SEC teams, Trey, for the bad non-conference games if they'll just do that. Go to 9, go 366, and you can schedule 3 high schools if you want for those other teams, for the other games. I don't care. You can schedule junior high teams if you want, as long as you give me 9 conference and goes 366.
Well, let's not swing too far in the other direction. I still
they already do.
I still want regular teams being scheduled in the non-conference. You can make one of those games the cupcake game. That's what every other college does.
There needs to be a cupcake, a mid-sized cupcake, and then that toughie. Yeah,
exactly.
One you might lose. One is a challenge.
It depends. I mean, how much of the future schedules are we going to roll back whenever we get conference realignment and expanded playoff? I mean, there are deals that have to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, they're going to have to reset a lot of things.
Texas and Georgia were supposed to play at the end of this decade.
Right. Yeah, there's no need.
You have to find a new foe now.
You have to reset because Texas and Georgia, or you're just going to have to find a way to melt that in to those years if it's something you can schedule.
Do we get a redo on LSU, Texas, by the way, in Baton Rouge? That game was canceled from COVID?
At some point. The conference will let you know, Trey.
Before we're happens. Conference foes.
Oh, before your conference foes. I'm going to doubt that. The SEC will inform you, Trey, of when that game will happen.
Well, that's a shame.
And then you'll be able to make your reservations for Baton Rouge. But you're going to have to wait. All right, there's our Flex 30 segment. We do it every day about 1:30. Remember, FLXATX.com for your high school sports coverage. If you missed the interview with Mr. Keaton Kubeka himself last night, they've got that posted and a whole lot of other stuff. Plus, be on the lookout for that All-Flex team. After Memorial Day, we're going to start throwing those All-Flex watch lists out at each position. All right, coming up, where are we at in society? A trans female tearing it up in skateboarding. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that one. We'll dig into it on the horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Now that's a good one with headphones. That was nice. Oh, wait a minute. I feel like I should know this. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Trey, you know this one?
No.
Can you tell me the name of the song, Zay?
Fox on the Run.
Fox on the Run?
Fox on the Run.
Wow. I think I'm going to get it wrong, but ELO?
That's what, that's what I was about to guess.
Damn it. Who is it?
Sweet.
Sweet?
Sweet.
Oh, I wasn't getting that one. Like S-U-I-T-E?
No.
Or Sweet?
S-W-E-E-T.
S-W-E-E-T. All right. Fox on the Run. Didn't have it. Sweet. I knew the song. Just didn't know that was the artist. Also, A Flock of Seagulls. Yep, that one. And Christine McVie and the New Radicals have been a part of the show today. That's a catchy-ass tune. And if you ever get a chance, go listen in the headphones. Because when that thing like crawls inside your head at the beginning. I've never heard that song on headphones. That was fantastic. Another part of Trey and my music snobbery is that we get to listen to songs on the headphone style here in the studio on the show and, you know, get all cool about it. It went one side of my head to the other, man. It's fantastic.
Things recorded in stereo. At one point when I was driving around an Oldsmobile Cutlass Calais in college, I didn't realize that one side of my speakers had completely blown out.
Uh-huh.
And there was a tape that I was listening to. It was Seven Mary Three.
Okay.
There was a song on that. The popular album that they had, the album with Cumbersome and Lucky, and they were Down by the Water or something. Anyhow, one of the songs on that album, it sounded so cool. It was almost like a cappella, and then the instrumentals came in. I'm like, this is such a badass song. I love how they did this. And then I heard it on regular speakers, and I was like, oh, I just have really bad speakers.
No, there's supposed to be guitar on top of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
There were supposed to be instruments playing that entire time, and all I got was his vocals because they just did the vocals in the right side.
That is fantastic. All right, we will get back to the Saban and Jimbo conversation next hour, plus a couple of guests coming in from the Chronicle to tell you about the best of winners. They are out there for you. AustinChronicle.com. Go see if your favorite restaurants and food and movies and shows and all that kind of stuff, music venues, see if they made the Austin Chronicle's best of list this year. That is coming up at 2:05. Right now, though, we got to get where we at in society. It's another case of folks in a certain sport being upset. Here we go.
Where are we at in society today?
All right, Chad, we go to a Red Bull skateboarding event.
All right.
For this next story, where female skateboarder Taylor Silverman competed in the Red Bull Cornerstone event and placed second recently. She lost to trans competitor, biological male, and now trans female, Lillian Gallagher. Understanding the physical advantage involved, Silverman posted a response on the Cornerstone results via Instagram. She expressed her frustration with not only losing the top spot's prize money, but watching Red Bull's attempt at inclusivity rob other women of an opportunity. According to her post, I am done being silent. Please share. Second slide is the email I sent Red Bull that was completely ignored. And here's the email. Hi, Eric. Hope all is well with you. I'm reaching out in hopes of being directed to the right person to express my concerns about what occurred at the Red Bull Cornerstone event with the transgender competitor in the women's division. Perhaps that is you. If not, hopefully you can put me in contact with the correct person. A biological man with a clear advantage won the women's division, best trick, and also won multiple qualifiers. This took away the opportunity that was meant for women to place and earn money. What happened was unfair, and at the time I was too uncomfortable to speak up. I understand that in today's society, even some women think this is acceptable, but I believe in doing the right thing even when it's not the popular thing. I now realize it's really important for me to speak up, and I'd like to schedule a time to talk. Disappointing that Red Bull has not contacted her at all to give her any sort of response, much less point her to the right person to have that conversation.
So, Trey, we had a conversation about a swimmer earlier this year, the Penn State swimmer. In that case, this was someone who had competed as a male and then was competing as a female, transgendered female. Has this person competed in skateboarding before? Do we know if they competed as a male skateboarder at one point?
I am not seeing the history of the trans female, but Silverman herself has said that I am a female athlete. I've been skateboarding for 11 years and competing for several years. I've been in three different contests with trans women, two of which I placed second. At the last contest series I did for Red Bull, I placed second. She added that the trans competitor who won took $1,000 in qualifiers, $3,000 in finals, and $1,000 for best trick. That totaled to $5,000 of prize money meant for female athletes. I took $1,000 in qualifiers, $1,750 for second place, and $2,750 in total. The girl who took third received $750. The girl who deserved $1,000 for best trick took nothing, along with whoever would have placed third. I deserve to place first, be acknowledged for my win, and get paid. I reached out to Red Bull and was ignored, and I'm sick of being bullied into silence.
Yeah, her logic is there. And my question on these stories, I don't know that I've asked it on the air before, but my question on this is, like, what would be so bad about this athlete still having to compete in the boys' division of the sport? You would be considered a female, obviously. Try to respect that part of it. Your name is now whatever, right? You want to be considered, you identify as a female. Absolutely, that's great. But in this realm, you're going to need to compete in the boys' division for, you know, whatever you lay out the reasoning and you move forward. And then it would just be like, you know, if a girl is playing baseball with boys, if a girl is competing, whatever the sport is competing against boys, there could be that reason could just be she wants to. But in this case, it's she wants to compete in the sport, but we're going to say you need to compete on this side of the sport or you can't compete.
Or if you want to compete against the females, that's fine, but you're not necessarily going to get the prize money as a result.
Yeah, and I don't know how to work that out in a sport like skateboarding. It's a judged event, right?
It is.
It's not as cut and dry as track and field or even swimming, where it's just who's hitting the wall first. There's some subjectivity there, but you and me and everybody listening now could understand that the physically stronger person is going to be able to do, in theory, is going to be able to get themselves in position to maybe do better tricks in skateboarding. And that would be the assumption here. If before any transitioning occurred, if this was a comparable size boy to any of the girls, or maybe a bigger boy than the girls, then you could, just like with the swimming story, you can extrapolate that and say, okay, there's probably going to be an advantage there physically. And then you can't counteract it with my idea from golf, right? You can't counteract it with different tees at that point. You can't say you tee off from here, you tee off from here. What would you do in skateboarding? How would you do that? There's no way to, okay, you do your 900 over here and you try your 900 here and here's how we make it fair. I'm not sure how to make that fair other than my initial idea there. She's going to have to compete in the boys' division.
Yeah, and look, you know, the individuals who are at the heart of these stories, the trans females at the heart of these stories, they deserve our love and support. But to just say it's okay for them to compete against biological females in competition when there are medals on the line or even when there's money on the line, I don't think is a viable solution. And by the way, that support goes for everybody in these stories except for those trans females who went to the all-female prison and knocked fellow prisoners up. They don't deserve our love and support. They were scamming the system.
That was underhanded, yeah. And it was under other things, too. But it was definitely underhanded. That's not right. Not right. You're right. Sometimes you got to draw the line. You got to draw the line on your understanding sometimes.
You're literally letting somebody go into an all-female prison still having their male parts, although they're identifying as a woman. What did you think was going to happen there?
As many details as prisons should be covering, it is amazing they didn't cover that detail. That didn't occur to you?
Bizarre.
You didn't realize what was, yeah. They were going in there armed in a certain way, and you didn't realize that. Okay. All right, there you go. Where are we at in society? We do it every day about 1:45. Trey brings you all kinds of stories, so you are going to want to be here. You're also going to want to be here for the 2 o'clock hour. We'll get back into the Nick Saban versus Jimbo Fisher stuff. If you've been under a rock or you've been working too hard, at 2:30, we'll tell you what Nick said. And then we'll tell you what Jimbo Fisher said. We might even play Jimbo's, part of Jimbo's rant for you again. Up next, though, let's talk Austin Chronicle. The best of the best is out there. The best of winners list is there. We'll tell you how you can get it. And Kim Jones and Sarah Wolf are going to come tell us a little more about it. Don't move. It's The Horn.